Madong Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, and we're up to the 40th chapter of the Medrash. The Medrash have been discussing that there are 10 times that God descended to planet Earth. And the fifth one is, Yirida Hamishit, the fifth time is, Sheyarad Lasneh, when God came down to that bush, the burning bush that appeared to Moshe in that first prophecy. Shenemals, the verse says, Va'ered, God himself says, I have come down, Natsilomi Mitzrayim, to save him from Egypt. V'inech kol ahar v'yarad l'toch asneh. God left the whole Mount Sinai and rested specifically in that Sneh v'shachanba, and rested there v'asneh tzara v'tzukah. The Sneh is really a tight, painful place. V'chulok kotzim medardarim. It's all different kinds of thorns, this Sneh. So why does God put himself in that kind of bush? It's a type of cactus which is, it's round and it's small and it has sharp thorns pointing downwards. So if you want to stick your hand in, your hand slides by the thorns. You want to pull it out, then it tears up the whole hand. It's a terrible thing, this little snake. You could imagine that if what? I don't know. What's a caper?
Salah.
Huh?
Salah.
I don't know what it is. Sorry.
Salah. It's in so how is it supposed to take that? And it says God came down to earth sometimes. Because we say that there's no like physicality of
the
family. Even better.
He was in with the So, it's a good question, which deserves a good answer. I should. That way he won't feel like odd man out. Right? There's a Rambam that discusses the different times that the Torah mentions Hashem's descent. And the Targum Unculus is ordinarily very careful in the way the Targum translates Hashem's descent. The Targum always says, V'itgili, Hashem appeared. There are exceptions. There are exceptions where the Targum uses a physical term that Hashem went down, which is discussed by the Rambam, by Ramban. It's discussed. Why did the Targum make those exceptions? Why in those specific places is it described physically? But for now, what we can simply say is that the idea here is a revelation. We have to wonder, was there a bush? Meaning, the simple understanding is that this was a vision of prophecy. And if it was a vision of prophecy, then who says there was even a bush that was burning there? Going with Maimonides' opinion that angels never take on physical form. And so Hashem sends an angel and Moshe sees a vision of a bush that's burning, and from the bush Hashem talks. So then what we would say is very simply that here, it's not about the Shekhinah literally coming down, but rather it's about Hashem teaching us this concept that, so to speak, Hashem came down. And Hashem chooses to reveal himself to Moshe as a vision of a burning bush. And the question is, why is that the first vision that Moshe sees? And the answer is that Hashem was teaching Moshe in that vision, Imo anochi v'tzara, I am with him in his suffering. That's the simplest answer we could give at this point. Being that this isn't the topic at hand, I think it's fair to get away with the simple answer. Yeah, okay, but you guys aren't going to let me get away with that. Yeah, okay.
I don't know the Rashi by heart about this, but this, how can it be pshat?
Why?
It says it's a book. God doesn't mention a vision.
Right, but the Torah also doesn't mention a vision when the three angels walk into Abraham's tent, and the Rambam learns that that's all a vision. And anyways, according to the Rambam, according the continuation of the Psukim, Hashem talks to Moshe. The Rambam says anytime Hashem speaks to a person, that's a vision. It's not, nothing physical is going on there. Rambam says every time you see Hashem talking, you see an angel talking, there's nothing physical. It's the neshama seeing something. The mule talks to Bilam. Was there the mule talking, or was it a vision of prophecy? So we're accustomed to saying the mule was talking. The Rambam says it was all prophetic vision.
But that was one of the things that's created before the creation.
Excellent question. I don't have an answer to that. What the Rambam does with that Mishnah, I don't know. I agree with you. When we learned that Mishnah, I said that's a, it's recorded, it's online. I said that's a question I have. I don't know Pshat in the Rambam. I don't know what the Rambam does with that Mishnah. Yeah.
So we have to understand Hashem only spoke to Moshe in the vision, and all those. That's clear, right?
Why would you say that? Moshe also, it was a vision. You're right that Moshe was awake and standing. But did Moshe see Hashem's vision with his physical eyes, or did Moshe see it with his neshama?
He was awake and standing.
He was awake and standing, but that doesn't mean he saw it with his physical eyes.
So if you say that angels never take
physical form, Maimonides. And if you want to see an expansion on that, you could see Nachmanides' explanation on the beginning of Parshas Vayera. That's where he takes the Rambam to task over that, where the three angels visit Avraham Avinu. And in our classes this year, I don't think we expanded on it as much, but 2 years ago and 3 years ago in our Parsha class on Parshas Vayera, we expanded on this.
So who was the guy that Yaakov, right?
Was fighting. Oh, that's one of Nachmanides' questions on Maimonides. How come Yaakov was limping at the end of that vision if it was all a vision?
Right.
So the Radak answers that. The Radak over there in Vayera. And it's quoted 2 and 3 years ago. I quoted it in class this year and last year. I don't think we went into it as much. So v'lama shachan betoch tzara v'tzukah. So why does God choose that as his place where to send his shechina to talk to Moshe? Asherat Yisrael b'tzara gdola, but Hashem saw the Jewish people in their great affliction. Afu shachan imem betoch tzara. So Hashem, so to speak, wanted to show I'm with them in their suffering. So Hashem gave the vision of appearing in this cactus, in the thorns. L'kayem ma she'ne'emar, this is a fulfillment of the verse, b'chol tzaratam lo tzar. In all of their suffering, Hashem is suffering with them. It's as though Hashem says, himo anochi b'tzara, I'm with them in their suffering. Now, okay. The tzara and the tzuka are two types of suffering. One is from within, and one is from without. And that's the Medrash is stressing. There's the external tzara, and then there's the internal tzara. There's the tzara that someone else is harming a person. There's the tzara that a person is his own psyche, his own person. He himself, intellectually, he's in a tzara. You could have a person in a prison in Russia. But his spirit isn't in the prison. His body's in the prison. He has an external tzara, but his spirit hasn't been broken. You could have a person sitting in the mansions where his physically, his externally, he's not in prison, but he's going to every psychologist under the sun because his spirit is in prison. There are two types of affliction, the Gra says, tzara and tzuka, internally and externally. And Am Yisrael was in both. Am Yisrael and Mitzrayim were suffering both. That's what the Medrash keeps stressing. Tzara v'tzuka. They were broken externally and internally. And that's what Hashem says, I am with them in their suffering. Rabbi Levi says that staff that was created in twilight, that was created in the last day of creation, so that staff was given to Adam, to Adam HaRishon. And when Hashem chased him out of the Garden of Eden, he took that staff and he took it with him out of the Garden of Eden. According to some opinions, it seems he used that staff to work the land. And Adam had one thing he took out of the Garden of Eden, this staff, which he gave on to Chanoch. V'chanoch misaro lenoach. Chanoch gave it over to Noach. Remember, that staff had engraved on it the Tzach, Adash, Be'achav, the acronym of the 10 plagues. V'noach misaro l'shem, Noach gave it to Shem, v'shem misaro l'Avraham, Shem gave it to Avram, Avram misaro l'Yitzhak, v'Yitzhak misaro l'Yaakov, Avram gave it to Yitzhak, Yitzhak to Yaakov, Yaakov horidol l'Mitzrayim, umisaro l'Yosef b'no, Yaakov took it down with him to Mitzrayim, and gave it to his son Yosef. And Yaakov gave it to Yosef. And Kshemet Yosef, when Yosef died, Nishlal kol beitov nitan befalterin shel paro. All of Yosef's house was looted and given to Paro. So that's what you get for being a faithful Jew. That's what you get. Throughout our history, we've had the same thing. The guy was faithful to the master, made him into a wealthy king, made him rule the country, and when he dies, they loot his house. And they gave everything over to Paro. V'ayah Yitro echad mechaltumei Mitzrayim, and one of Paro's sorcerers was Jethro, was Yisro. So Yisro was there advising Paro. And he saw the staff, and he saw that there were special signs written on that staff. So he sees something unusual about it. Now he's a sorcerer, and he sees these incantations on the staff. So he wanted them. So what does Yisro do? He took the staff. We're in the 40th chapter. If you want to bring me that copy, I'll show you that copy. And he stuck it in his garden. He took the staff and he brought him with him. And he stuck it in his garden. And so Yisro sees that the staff is there in the garden. And he sees, after he stuck it in the garden, no one could pull it out of the garden. They're trying to pull out the staff and no one could get it out. When people wanted his daughter, Yisro would say, whoever could pull out that staff could have my daughter Tzipora. And everyone would try. And they could. And along comes Moshe. Moshe comes to Yisro's house. Moshe comes to his house. He's walking through his garden. So he sees the stick and he says, hey, Hebrew writing. Now he's at home. He came to Yisro's house. He sees a stick with Hebrew writing. He reads the signs that are on the staff. And he picks up the staff and he brings it home. And he's walking around with this interesting stick that he found in Yisro's garden. Now, and Yisro sees that Moshe, and Yisro said, okay, if he has that stick, Yisro being the sorcerer that he was, he said, he's the one that will save the Jews from Egypt. That's why he said, I want you to marry my daughter Tzipora. Because he saw, he understood what it meant to be able to take that stick. That stick, a stick in Tanakh often represents rulership. A stick in Tanakh, throughout Tanakh. What are the tribes called? Shevet, Mate, sticks. A stick in Tanakh often represents rulership. Yes?
Speaking of things, I heard that this whole thing,
Zipporah was a goy, wasn't she? Yeah, it's Yisro's daughter, but who was Jewish? The Torah wasn't yet given. Again?
Even all Abraham's family, they want to keep it all within the people.
Right.
Even the thing about Yosef's wife was actually Jewish because she was from Dina, right?
Right.
So why Moshe of all people, how's he got off his hook?
It's a good question. Approximately 20 years ago, I was leaving the house on a wintry day. And Rabbi Ze'ev Wein of blessed memory, Rabbi Beryl Wein's father, I saw him walking down the street. He would walk the long walk to the yeshiva in the cold day. He was an old man, but he kept walking. And I ran, and I offered him a ride. And in the ride, I took advantage, and I asked him this question. I asked him, how come Moshe Rabbeinu was not careful to do what the forefathers did to marry a Jewish wife? And he said to me, there's a Rabbeinu Bechaye that answers it. And you have to understand who Rabbi Ze'ev Wein was. When they were worried in Europe that there would not be a single copy of Talmud left, so they took students to memorize portions of Shas. And he was in charge of one of the biggest Masechtas. I think he was in charge of Yevamos, remembering the whole tractate by heart, all of Rashi and all of Tosus. And in yeshiva, they didn't always have copies of the Shas in the yeshiva. You know, everything was hard to come by. So when they need to ask a question on Yevamos, they could come to him. That was his responsibility. I don't remember if it was Yevamos or Baba Basra. One of the biggest tractates in Shas was his responsibility to know the whole tractate by heart and all the Rashi and Tosus. If you had a question, you come to him, and that was his job, to keep that tractate in the Jewish people, that if there would be no copy of the Shas left, and he would be left, he could rewrite that copy of the Shas, that volume of the Shas. Now, when I asked him the question, he couldn't see well anymore. So the people learning with him would make copies where they take it, you know, you could enlarge something 144 times, so they'd have to enlarge it 3 or 4 times, 144 times, for him to be able to see it. But he had someone enlarge that Rabbeinu Bechaye for us, and then he read it to me, and he showed me the answer there. That was him. But you're stuck with me, and I don't remember, even though he showed it to me, and I didn't learn all of Rabbeinu Bechaye, so we'll look it up later. But Rabbeinu Bechaye asked the question. He showed me the answer. At least they know where to go to look for it. Right. So Rabbeinu Bechaye. Yeah.
So all the 10 plagues were predetermined to happen?
Yes.
It didn't matter what Pharaoh wanted to do. It's not because Pharaoh's heart hardened or hardened his heart or hardened his
heart. There's Radak, which quotes the Geonim on the story of Avshalom. He walked in just in time. When Avshalom was killed in his rebellion against his father, so the pasuk says, "Ve'Avshalom lakach lo yad." Avshalom took the literal understanding is that he took a place. He saw he didn't have any kids to inherit him afterwards. So what Avshalom did was he set up a monument in his memory. He said, this should be in memory of me. And all his kids died in his lifetime because he burnt his friend's crop. So we have a tradition that someone who dares burn someone else's livelihood will not live to see their kids live. And that's what happened. Avshalom, even though he had kids, he lost all his kids in his lifetime. And so he set up this monument. And we have a tradition that when it says he took a portion, although literally it means he set up that monument, it's referring to a different concept spiritually. It's referring to the idea that Hashem had decreed on David. Hashem said to David HaMelech, Hineni mekim alecha ra'a mibeitecha. I will arouse evil from within your own home to destroy you. So you ask, did Avshalom have free choice to rebel against David or not? Hashem had already declared that evil will arouse on David from within his own home. So the pasuk is telling you, Avshalom took that portion. Meaning it didn't have to be him. Hashem sometimes makes a decree that something bad's going to happen. Now how is it going to play itself out? It doesn't have to be you. Let's say Paro would have said, I'm letting you go. So the Rishonim discussed that. Then we would have gone for a 3-day holiday, the way we said. How would the plagues have played themselves out? Hashem has his ways to bring whatever has to happen to be. Meaning every prophecy has multiple interpretations and capacity to play itself out in different ways. It didn't have to come to play that way. We see it coming to play because of certain decisions people made. Hashem says to David HaMelech, someone evil will arise from within your home and try to defeat you. We know there were others who were getting ready for a rebellion against David. Yoav was getting ready, his own nephew. There were others who were preparing a rebellion against David. When Avshalom took it, so they joined forces with him. And then Achitophel was thinking, Achitophel, his own father-in-law. Achitophel was his wife's grandfather, right? Bathsheba's grandfather was Achitophel. So Achitophel was also ready to rebel against David. So who would have been the key figure to lead the rebellion against David? That Hashem left to human decision. Meaning, if Avshalom chose to lead the rebellion, so he took that lot. That's what the pasuk says. He took that lot, and this is an important point for all of Tanakh. Very often in Tanakh, we have a prophecy that something bad is going to happen. So then you say, well, where's the free choice? Like you just said, if it's already predetermined there are going to be 10 plagues, then what does it mean that Hashem asked Paro to give in? Well, had Paro given in, it wouldn't have played itself out that way. It could have been that the 10 plagues would not have happened in 1 year. Hashem would have waited for a different reason for them to deserve it. So after 2 plagues, 3 plagues, 4 plagues, whenever he would have given in, the Jews would have gone out, made their 3-day celebration in honor of Hashem, had the revelation at Sinai, been given the Torah possibly, been given enough strength to be able to stand up to the forced servitude of the continued servitude of Mitzrayim, and then be able to continue. Meaning that break would have allowed them not to fall beyond that 49th level of Tumah where they were holding. They needed a break. They couldn't continue where they were. So Hashem said, come and let them have a break. When he wouldn't let them have a break, so then ultimately they were freed. This is the interpretation of some of the Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim say this, that had he let them go, they would have really only gone for 3 days. And then he kept going until he was broken. And Hashem said, I know you won't give in. But he had free choice. He could have given in. You with me? Okay, so this is an idea of the Geonim that's quoted in the Radak over there, in the story of Avshalom. This concept, this understanding. But coming back to the Medrash. So the Medrash says that when Moshe pulled out the staff, Yisrael said, this is going to be the redeemer of the Jewish people from Egypt. And that's why he gave him his daughter Tzipora as a wife. Shneimal, the verse says, Vayol Moshe Rashev Tetaish. Moshe agreed to sit with the man. Vayam Moshe Roet Tzono Shirito Abayim Shana. Moshe was watching his sheep for 40 years. Yeah, Moshe was out in Midian for 40 years. Velo shikratam chayat asadeh. And when he watched the sheep, so the animals, the wild animals of the field, wouldn't devour that sheep. Vayu parim v'rabim arbe meod. And they would flourish. They were multiplying. V'aleim ha'ketuv omer ketzon kodashim. About them the verse says, like the holy sheep. So the sheep of Yisrael are called holy sheep. They were grazing in a holy place. For 40 years, they're out there at Sinai grazing. And for 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu is on Mount Sinai grazing the sheep. He would always take the sheep out to Chorev, to Sinai. Shneimal, the verse says, he took the sheep beyond the desert, out to Sinai. And over there, at Sinai, Hashem revealed himself from within that sneh. Shneimal, the verse says, the angel of Hashem appeared to him from within that sneh. So here you see an interesting point that the Medrash is learning that when one pasuk says it was a malach and another pasuk says it was Hashem, the Medrash is learning that what the whole vision of the sneh was an angel. Does that answer your question about ten tefachim? That it wasn't, there was no difference. It wasn't the Shekhinah appearing down in the sneh, but rather the Medrash is learning that it was all the malach. Meaning, some Rishonim learn that it was an evolvement. He was growing in his capacity for prophecy, and first he had a lower level of prophecy that the malach appeared from within the sneh, and then the pasuk says Hashem said to Moshe. That means he went to a higher level of prophecy where Hashem directly spoke to him. And there, that's why I gave you the first answer. But the Medrash is learning that it was all one vision of a malach. Moshe sees the fire in the sneh. It's not consuming the sneh. Nor is the sneh overcoming the flames of the fire. And the sneh grows specifically where there's a source of water. So one of the two should have been victorious. Either the water that the sneh is filled with, or the fire. But when neither one is victorious, he didn't understand that. Moshe is looking at it and he's wondering what's going on here. Moshe said, what honor is going on over here? What's special about this that neither one is winning? So let me go see why is this happening. God says to Moshe, 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 amod al omdecha. Hashem says to Moshe, stand there. Shasham ani atid liten tatorah liYisrael. Because right there, that's where I'm going to give the Torah to Israel. Shneimal, as the verse says, al tikrav alom, don't come near here. Shana alecha ma'al raglecha. Remove the shoes from your feet. Okay, we'll just finish this line, and then there's a philosophical concept we have to wonder about. Mikan amru, from here our sages said, kol ha'omid b'mekom kadosh tzrich lishlof na'alo. Whoever's standing in the holy place has to remove his shoes. Shken amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu el Moshe shan alecha mal raglecha. As Hashem said to Moshe, remove your shoe from your feet. Who says you have to have your shoes? Today, that's the norm. So we take into account what are the norms of each society. And the norms in our society is that anything respectable you do with your shoes. You don't take out the garbage without shoes. Anyone respectable isn't seen anywhere without shoes. So that's the way we behave. I never heard of anywhere in the world that people remove their shoes out of respect. You're telling me something I'm unaware of. In mosques, okay, Muslims do that. There's a story that the Muslims once wanted a debate with the Jews. So the Jews sent, I don't know if this story is true, but this is the story they tell. So there was one guy in town who said, Rabbi, let me go debate them. So he went, and they said, we're the real Jews. So the Jew came in, and he was in the middle of doing his work, and he was with his boots, and they were all muddy. And the Muslim standing there, I don't know if it was a Muslim or a Christian, he was standing and telling the king, we're the real Jews. And then he comes in late. So the guy takes advantage of the way he looks, huffing and puffing, and he says, look at that Jew. He walks in front of the king with filthy shoes. So the Jew says to him, well, I'll tell you what, I wanted to take off my shoes, but I was scared. I was scared of thieves. So the king says, what thieves are in my palace? So the Jew says, he's the thief that's in your palace. So the guy looks astounded. I'm a thief, I take your shoes? So the guy says, sure, look in the Torah. It says, when God saw Moshe by the burning bush, God said to Moshe, take off your shoes. Moshe took off his shoes. And it never says he put them back on again. That's because you guys were there stealing it from him. They didn't have his shoes to put them back on. So the guy says, that's utterly ridiculous. We didn't exist back then. So he says, right. Okay. Okay, so Hashem tells him to take off his shoes, but there's a philosophical concept we have to wonder about here. Hashem says, stay where you are, because there I will give the Torah to Israel. Remove your shoes from your feet, because the place you're standing on is holy. What makes a place holy? Is there intrinsic holiness, and then we do holy activities there? Or is the holiness of the place because of what we're going to do there? And I think that throughout Tanakh and Midrashim, we see that there is intrinsic holiness. I know that others are not as convinced. Others feel there are two ways of understanding what Chazal mean. I don't really see it. And I think this is another example. Nothing happened there yet. What's holy about the place? Hashem tells him, take off your shoes, because in the future I will give the Jewish people the Torah there. So in the future it will be holy. What makes it holy today? Nothing happened there yet. I think that this is one place that we again see this concept. The place is holy. Hashem chose a place that's holy to give us the Torah. There is a discussion whether Sinai remained holy. We see that after the giving of the Torah, we could ascend Sinai. There doesn't seem to be any residual effects of the giving of the Torah there. So that's something which has to be explored. How come years beforehand, Hashem tells Moshe, take off your shoes, the Jews are going to get the Torah there. And directly after the receipt of the Torah, Hashem says, okay, now the Shekhinah left, and now the Jews can go ascend Mount Sinai. What happened there? Yeah?
It's a similar concept, like, we don't know where Moshe is buried, or we're not allowed to go to Harabai. Because if you know where Mount Sinai is, maybe it would have an effect?
Maybe. I don't know. Okay, so we'll pick up here, Mizrachim, next time.